How do you know you're ready to hire a community manager? How do you make sure that you hire a rockstar community manager? And how do you best support them once they're on your team? I get asked these questions all the time, which is why I'm sharing this podcast interview with you. This time, I am not the one doing the interviewing. In fact, I'm being interviewed by my friend Paula Maidens for her podcast, and she's an expert on hiring and leadership and wanted to dive into the specifics around community managers. It was such a great interview. I asked her if I could share it here. Now, if you have a community manager and you want to uplevel their skills, make sure to check out my community training course at shannalynn.com/cultivate. And if you are a community manager or want to become a community manager, we always need more of you. In fact, I have people reaching out to me all the time asking for help recruiting a great community manager, and they want somebody trained through my Cultivate program. And honestly, they get swooped up pretty fast. So if you're in the market to advance your skills in the online space, I highly encourage you to check out my training course. Go to shannalynn.com/OCM. for online community manager to learn more. And in the meantime, dive into this episode to learn all about hiring and training community managers. This is for you, the online business owner who wants to maximize your profit and multiply your impact. I'm Shanna, host of the Community Creators Podcast. I've spent over a decade helping top brands and entrepreneurs create thriving communities that increase their reach, retention, and revenue. This podcast is where I share my best insights and invite you into conversations with the world's leading community creators and cultivators. So grab your favorite mug, fill it up, and let's get started.
Hey, everybody. I am thrilled to have Shanna Lynn on the podcast today. Shanna is an online community strategist who is the trusted advisor to many of the big top-tier subscription businesses that you know and love. She helps them create thriving communities and increase their retention. Shanna is really big on systems, team, and profit, so we've got a heap in common. And today we're going to be talking about hiring and managing community managers. I'm so excited to be sharing her wisdom with you. So a very big warm welcome to you, Shanna. It's so good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is going to be super fun.
Absolutely. Do you want to kick off by telling everybody about you and your business and what you actually do?
Yeah, of course. So first and foremost, I am a wife and I'm a mom to four and a grandma to one. So big family person. We homeschool a lot of time with the family, a lot of time. And I've been a full-time entrepreneur working from home since 2012. So I first spoke about online communities back in 2008, talking about the virtual reality world of Second Life, which is now kind of been replaced with the metaverse, if you will. So this is a space that is not new to me. I've worked in the corporate area of all of this, worked with brick and mortar businesses, and now have really focused in with a lot of online businesses. But this is my heart in helping people create thriving communities that people never want to leave so that they can increase retention, which ultimately helps them build more profit in their business.
So good. So everybody that's listening, well, mostly entrepreneurs, and they're in that stage of their business where they're still really hands-on and they're working through the process of going, what can I get off my plate to be able to grow and give themselves more space? So definitely for many of the people, managing their communities and being involved is one of those things on the list. So I want to start with asking, in your experience, is it actually possible to have somebody else manage your community?
Yeah, it is. And honestly, a great community manager can manage the community better than you. And the reason being is because as the business owner, we have so many hats that we're wearing, especially in the early stage of our business. And at the end of the day, driving revenue is our number one goal. So when we have to launch or sell more products or create more products, that often ends up becoming the priority, and nurturing our customers and serving our customers well, or really nurturing our community, tends to kind of fall to the wayside. And we become really just reactive. Oh, there's a new post that I have to respond to, and you get in there and get it done. Whereas when you have a community manager in there whose primary goal is really helping that community make progress in whatever you're teaching them, they are proactively nurturing the community. They're thinking about it from a strategic level in a way that you can as a business owner, but you probably just don't have the time to.
I love that, because that is the number one question that everybody's weighing up. It's, but can this person do it better than me? Yeah. And actually, is it worth me spending the money on somebody else doing it? So I love that you've just said that it'll never get deprioritized. And in fact, they'll be able to bring more energy and ideas to it in those busy times of your business.
Yeah, of course. And it does require you as the business owner to really develop the strategy of what it looks like to manage that community and to help establish the purpose and the culture. We have these four pillars of a thriving community that we teach. And the business owner is the one who really needs to get that strategy in place so that the community manager can do their job effectively. So I always say it takes a business owner being really great at leading a community in order for them to pass the torch on to a community manager. Oftentimes, we have community managers that don't succeed in the role. And one of the reasons that they don't succeed is because actually the business owner wasn't really succeeding in the role in the first place. And so they didn't really have the trust and authority within their own community to be able to pass that on and transition that trust and authority to the community manager. So as a business owner, you want to make sure you're really clear about the kind of community you want to create, the kind of culture that you want to have inside of your community, and really establish yourself and your own voice as an authority, as a leader, as a guide inside of that community before you try and hire somebody else to step in and to pass that torch to.
So it's like you can't hire somebody to fix it, so to speak, if it's not already like thriving and buzzing and whatnot, but you can certainly hand over a buzzing community to somebody else.
Yeah. And there are community managers that can come in and help guide you in fixing it, but they're going to be looking to you to step in to realign that community and really help establish authority in that community because you're the one that people want to see. You're the one that people trust. You're the reason that people bought. So you don't get to completely disappear. But when you have a really great community manager, what they're going to do is they're going to come to you and say, here's how I need you to show up. Can you do this live? Can you comment on this post? And can you review this because we have this angry customer in the community and we've never dealt with this before? Can you tell me how you would respond to this? And then I'm going to document that. I'm not going to need you to answer this question again, but I haven't encountered this before. So they're going to come to you and basically guide you in how to best support the community versus you just feeling like you're constantly having to check in. It's always in the back of your mind. It's always in your Facebook notifications. You turn all of that off and let your community manager do that work and ping you when you're needed.
Love that. Because that's one of the biggest things that my clients talk about. It's if I'm going to get interrupted all day with how do I answer this? How do I answer this? Then I may as well just be doing it myself and cut out the middleman. So you've started to talk, I think, probably about what sounds like best practice. So can you talk to us about that? So what do you need to have in place? Is it a stage thing to hand it over to a community manager? What do you need to be clear on up front? Tell us about best practice.
Yes, we talk about the community cultivated framework, which is these four pillars of a thriving community. So it's cause, which is having a really clear purpose and path and direction for people. Culture, which is establishing very clear beliefs, behaviors, and boundaries. And we talk about communication, whether it's outgoing communication to your community, all of those announcement posts, whether it's incoming, which is how are we actually hearing from them, getting feedback from them, or internal, which are those discussions that happen within our community forum. And then we have the last piece, which is connection, which is all about really creating safety and defining the different spaces where our community can connect. Because it's not just a Facebook group, right? Mm-hmm. Your community, that's the group of people that you serve and you connect with them in lots of different ways. So having a community manager come in and try and establish those four pillars is really challenging because it's your business. You're the one who's been running it. You're the one who has the vision. You're the one who has helped lay the foundation of this culture. And it's really hard for you because you probably just created it organically. You weren't really strategic about it. So how do you transfer that knowledge to somebody else? It's just like anything else when you hire somebody. You have to have a way to transfer that knowledge. So establishing that framework within your business is the first thing to do so that you can transfer that vision, that strategy for the community to a community manager. So that's job number one. Then you have to make sure that you're hiring the right person, which we can have a whole nother conversation about that. Like, how do you make sure you're hiring the right community manager? But once you've hired that person, there is an onboarding, just like any other role that you have in the business, where you're going to have to be more hands-on in the beginning. But if you've hired the right person, they understand that their job is to learn as they go. So yes, they're asking a lot of questions in the beginning, but what they shouldn't be doing is asking the same questions over and over again. But that also requires you as a leader to let go of the reins because some of us say we want a community manager, but then we don't really want to let go. Oh, I'll just respond to that. Oh, I'll take care of that. Oh, just let me handle that. And we have to really make sure that we empower that leader in order for them to be able to go forth and handle those scenarios moving forward.
Love that. So establish your framework with those four pillars, hire the right person, onboard and spend time with them, and then let go. Let them do their job and go and do yours. Love that.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the hiring piece. So in your experience, why does it go wrong sometimes? And what is it when you're hiring a community manager that you really need to be careful to look for?
Community managers are tough hires because, well, they represent us. And that's really hard for people to have somebody else represent us to our community. We're basically handing over a black book of relationships that we have taken all of this time to build. And our reputation is on the line. Our retention in our program is on the line, all connected to this community manager. So there's a lot of weight on this position, although a lot of people don't see it that way because they're not necessarily a director level or C-suite level role. But we emotionally feel that when we go to hire that person. So what happens is we tend to only hire people we know. We hire people who are existing community members. We're like, well, Sally is really great at engaging in the community. She's always answering people's questions in the community. She would make a great community manager. Or, oh, my friend Jess, she's really lovely. I think she would be great. Or, oh, I have this assistant that works for me and that assistant can manage this community. And what we've done is we've basically said, these are people I know and that I feel like I can trust. And I'm not going to go through a hiring process because there's no way a stranger is going to be right fit for the community. So that's often the mistake that we see. There's actually no hiring process. People just hire somebody that feels convenient and make that emotional decision around hiring. So having a solid hiring process, really understanding that you are hiring for a very specific role. Now, I always like to distinguish between a virtual assistant and a community manager. They're not the same. If you just want somebody to let people in and out of a Facebook group, that's a VA. We don't have to hire a community manager for that. Community manager is somebody who's really strategically driving progress forward inside of your online program and inside of the Facebook group and in other areas as well. So we want to get really clear that that's the level that we're hiring for. And then we want to make sure that we're hiring somebody who has the qualities and experience we'd be looking for in a community manager. They don't have to have experience as a community manager, but I always say you want somebody who's detail-oriented. This is the cruise director of your organization. It's their job to make sure that people are at the right place at the right time and they have the right information. They're handling a lot of details. So that's really important. They need to be a great communicator, both oral and written. It used to be primarily just written, but now actually because of ChatGPT and all the AI tools, like that's actually not as much a priority because you can get a lot of support in that area, but they can't get a lot of support when they're leading or hosting a Zoom call or they're one-on-one with a member who's going through a hard time. So that oral and written communication is really important. So it's important that a community manager is emotionally intelligent because they're dealing with human-to-human interaction and you're going to have people who are sometimes saying crazy things in the community and they need to be handled in a really gentle way. And if a community manager doesn't have the emotional intelligence to not take that personally and to be able to remove themselves emotionally from that situation, it can end up blowing up. So that is really important to understand how people have handled tough situations like that in the past. And then finally, we're really looking for somebody who has experience working with people. I say they need to love people, but they need to have had that love tested. And you have not had that love tested if you have not worked in customer support or retail or hospitality. Those are the kinds of past jobs, like I said, doesn't have to be an online community manager, but you've worked in a situation where you have had to deal with challenging people and you've had your love for people tested. They actually do love people, not just in a social situation. They're not just extroverted, but they've actually had that love for people tested. And those are really the four things that I look for generally. And then, of course, specifically based on your business needs and the roles and responsibilities that you've defined, there may be other skills or behaviors that you're looking for.
Love that. I love the way you put that. They've had their love for people tested.
Yes. Because everybody will say that they love people because they're just the social butterfly. And people think, oh, I'll just hire a social butterfly to be my community manager. And I'm like, well, if they haven't had it tested, we're not quite sure.
Totally. Love that. I think that you started to talk before about how they represent you in the group and how you're effectively handing them your black book of people. And I want to talk about, I know for a lot of my clients, a lot of the people I've spoken to, there's a lot of fear that sits around that, around somebody like stealing it, selling your business, starting to do business with people directly, et cetera, et cetera. And that often stops people from actually fully handing over the reins because in theory, as you said, the fourth step, let go, let them do their job and you go and do yours. So how do you, in your opinion, screen for the person who you can actually trust? And then secondly, how do you keep yourself calm knowing, okay, they're doing the right thing, my people are safe, my business is safe, so you can actually go off and focus on what's important to you, growing revenue?
If you want to create a thriving online community, you need to join my free Community Creators Hub. Inside of this free hub, you're going to get access to a searchable database of every episode of this podcast, as well as my favorite free resources, like my 77 plus connection ideas list, community manager best practices guide, and scripts for video messaging, plus so much more. Discover the tools and the resources that I rely on to grow and manage thriving online communities. Just go to communitycreatorshub.com to get your free access.
Yeah. You can never fully safeguard yourself from that because we never really know the internal desires of the people that we hire, nor do we know what's going to change about them. I mean, I know people that have been hired as full-time community managers and have never in their right mind thought that they were ever going to leave or go do their own thing. And they're in a program that tells people, you should work for yourself. It's so amazing. So they spend years just like being
hearing
told,
this message.
Create your own schedule, be your own boss. And so it's only natural that they eventually want to go and try and do that. And you can trust that community managers are replaceable. And I think that is the biggest fear that people have is that a community manager leaving a community is going to have a negative impact. And how you respond to that community manager leaving and how you support them in their exiting is going to determine how your community responds and they're leaving. And I've seen many transitions happen where it's a very seamless transition. There's no impact on the community at all. I mean, I think people think it's just going to be a big blow up. But it's not because they're not there for the community manager. That's not why they bought in the first place.
Yeah.
But when we're screening and we're really looking for a community manager who's there for the long term, I think it is a lot about asking those questions about their long-term vision for their career and what they are looking to create for themselves, and also casting a vision of what you want to create for them. Because community managers often feel like that's as far as they can go in a business, but there is actually an ascension path for community managers to become community directors, retention managers, program directors. So for them to see that vision that this work in the community, if done well, can expand to other retention-related activities related to the program, can help cast that vision and help you all be able to align around that. So can we align around the future vision? As we're onboarding, are we setting really clear expectations around those kinds of boundaries that we have? A lot of people have boundaries around direct messaging with clients, friending clients, can clearly have them sign non-competes. There's lots of legal documents that you can have them signed as well, that in having to sign those, they generate conversations that make sure that you're on the same page about those sorts of things. And then I think just making sure that when you see a yellow flag or you see a red flag that makes you think that this person may be on the way out or that they may be doing something that could jeopardize your business, that you address it directly and you have mm-hmm. that crucial conversation early on versus assuming it's nothing. Those corrective conversations, those exploratory conversations, I think can help make sure that if you need to transition somebody out, that you're able to do that before all of this damage has been done in the background.
Love that. I love that you talked about somebody leaving your business doesn't need to be the worst thing in the world. And I think that's actually the reality of the new world that we live in. People don't hang around for 10 years. I mean, some do, but we can't expect or rely on that. One of the things I talk to my clients about is actually a sustainable business is a business where the systems hold up your business and people can come and go, as opposed to a person being the thing that's holding up your community in this case, actually not being afraid of that. I love that. And that confidence that, yes, lots of people have done it. Community managers have transitioned in and out, and it's been a beautiful experience for the whole community. And you can wish someone well. That's so good to hear. And I love that you also said, know your boundaries when it comes to direct messaging and talk about it up front. and set that expectation. And if you have a whiff that something else is happening, address it, dive into it. Because I think it's also easy to make all these assumptions about what you think's going on and write the person off from a distance and think, oh, well, this is what they're doing, and then start to go to plan B without actually having a conversation about it as well. You said, talk about it, address it, and see if it's actually a real thing and make a plan.
Yes, exactly. And that, I think, is in so many ways that applies to how we set a community manager up for success and really any team member. It's about being really clear about those expectations and about transitioning influence over time and making sure that we're on the same page. And if we see something that needs to be corrected, we don't assume it's going to get corrected on our own. We make sure that we do that. And a community manager, any team member really, is they are going to do things in a way that you would not have done it. They're not going to do everything how you would have done it. And so I think it's important that we recognize that and that we're careful not to correct for little nuances of, oh, this is how I would have said it, or this is how I would have responded to that, because ultimately they are not you. And their job is not to sound like you. Their job is to carry your vision forward. Their job is to help people make progress in the methodology and systems that you teach. But it's not to be you inside of the community, right? They can regurgitate you in the community in a lot of ways, but they should have their own personality that fits within the umbrella of your bigger culture and your bigger brand. So they should be doing things slightly different than you would, but it's really focusing on their ability to achieve the outcome, right? If the outcome of the post is that this person feels supported, they're back active in the community again, they're re-engaged, did this person's response lead to that outcome? And if so, wonderful. And if not, then that's where we need to have a conversation about how maybe they could correct the way that it's been done. But I see in onboarding and ongoing onboarding processes with community managers that one of the biggest hiccups and tension points that the business owner doesn't realize is a point of frustration for them is that they're actually expecting the community manager to respond like them and sound like them. And in a lot of ways, that's not what we're going for. We're looking for the outcome, the result of the engagement being to activate members and keep them feeling supported and making progress.
Love that. So it's let them bring their own personality, for example, or perhaps to a certain extent, their own language to getting the same outcome, as long as it's within the values and whatever rules that you've set up for maybe things that you can and can't say or how you say it in your business. And I guess it comes back to, you can't ask somebody to do something if you're not clear on that for yourself.
Right. Those foundations are so important.
So would you recommend getting as specific as, we don't use emojis, or we do use emojis, or we don't use slang, or we never put love hearts or something like that? Are you drilling down into, when you're setting, I guess, the framework of the culture and the way you want your members to feel, are you dropping to that sort of detail? Or is it you bring your own personality and your own emojis, for example, as long as the person feels like this?
We do have some clients that are big on voice guides. So they've had, you know, somebody create a voice guide for them that details out those kinds of things. But voice guides, I try to remind people, are really for copywriters who are trying to write like they are you. They are not for emails from other team members. They're not for comments coming from a community manager. They are for a copywriter that is pretending to be you, writing your sales emails for you, writing your newsletter for you. That's really what a voice guide is for. Now, I do think that high-level voice guide, general tones, personalities of brands, culture of brands, that's a large umbrella that somebody can operate within. And so it's very easy to say, hey, we're a very serious and professional company. So we actually don't use emojis, and we never use more than one exclamation point. That's really simple to put into place. Whereas voice guides can be pages and pages of details. I don't recommend expecting a community manager who is not a copywriter to follow one, but I do think you can have some high-level boundaries.
Love that. Yeah. Okay, cool. Because I think that can be a hiccup, thinking, how much detail do I need to preempt and go into to be able to support this person? So keep it high level, but link it to sort of the values and the culture and the personality of the brand and hand that over. Love that. In that sort of way of thinking, or along that line of thought, is there anything else in the don't do category that you could share? If we're talking to the leader who's managing the community manager, is there anything else that they shouldn't do to really empower the person to succeed?
One of the things that I see happen is when business owners undermine the authority of the community manager within the community. So we have to be really careful about that, where we are not correcting our community manager in public in our community forum. So it's one thing to validate what the community manager has said and then expand upon that. Like what Shanna said was so amazing. Definitely take this piece of advice. And you could also, and then give further detail on that. And I think that's true often for any response that a business owner is going to have in a community where somebody else has already responded. But I do see that happen sometimes where business owners are like, that's not how I would have responded. And instead of sending a Slack message and saying, hey, could you correct this or could you edit this? They come in and they just really undermine that authority that they've worked so hard to create. And that's the thing, is it's you really do have to pass the torch of authority and give them ownership. We have to give them ownership of the result. Now, for some community managers, that ownership, that metric is really retention because they're involved in more than just the community. They're involved in content creation and all sorts of aspects. They kind of have a much larger role. But for some, it's active member participation, it's engagement levels inside of the community, it's success stories inside of the community. You can determine what that metric is, but that at the end of the day, we have to give them ownership of it. Make sure that on the strategic side of what's happening in the community, we're actually listening to them, that we are empowering them and giving them space to come with ideas, to come with new strategies, giving them the opportunity to play and test, which is something that once our core strategy is established, once that community cultivated framework is done, then we should have some room to play. Then we should have this like 10-80-10 relationship. I worked as the director of community for a guy named Stu McLaren for 3 years. And we had what we called 10-80-10, which was I would come to him with the first 10% of an idea and he would either say no to it or he would help me shape it into what worked for a vision for him. I would take care of the other 80% in the middle, and I'd come back to him and show him the final 10 before we hit go. And that kind of relationship was very empowering because I knew that ultimately I was in charge. I was responsible for the result. I was the one who needed to make it happen. And I could get his feedback. I could make sure there was alignment because the community was so closely tied, especially for him, to his brand. But I could still come to the table other than just implementing a checklist from Asana every day, making sure that I respond to the community every day. I actually had permission and was empowered to think strategically about how to move the community forward.
I love that you're talking about outcomes. I think that's so big. It's like you can hand over tasks and you can hand over responsibilities, but if you actually hand over somebody the ability to focus on and be empowered to move something towards an outcome that you can really clearly both talk about, I think everything changes. So I love that.
Yeah, a lot of people treat community managers like customer service people. The outcome is inbox zero for a lot of customer support reps. And I'm like, no, the outcome is creating a better customer experience. And if a customer support person thinks my goal is to get to inbox zero, they're not paying attention to how they respond. They're just paying attention to how fast they get to a resolution. And they're also not looking for opportunities to improve the experience to prevent the ticket in the first place. It's the same thing for a community manager. If the outcome is respond to 100% of posts in the community, and which is often what I hear people's goal are, I just want to make sure every post gets touched. Like, to what end? How is that supporting the bottom line of your business if every post gets touched? Let's think about the leading metrics that lead to that lagging metric of retention. And those leading metrics are participation in calls, activation inside of the community, feeling supported, making progress, implementation. These are all of those leading metrics that can get us a higher retention number.
Oh, I feel like we've talked about so much awesome stuff today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share as far as like wisdom or, you know, things that you wish everybody would know to be able to make this a success?
Yeah, just two pieces of advice. One is that you can totally hire part-time with the intention to move to full-time. I think oftentimes people think they need to hire a full-time community manager, but there's a lot of community managers out there that are comfortable with part-time work. They're former teachers, they're stay-at-home moms, they like the flexibility, and they like that part-time. So don't feel like you have to have one full-time in order to get the support that you need. And then second, know that in the onboarding process, you don't have to throw them into your community right away. So we often recommend that they spend the first 30 to 60 days, even behind the scenes, not actually engaging directly in the community, but doing things behind the scenes, reviewing emails and providing feedback, even looking at customer support tickets, getting to know the community really well before you actually put them in front of the community. So if you have a probationary period, if you're nervous about the person that you're hiring, if you're somebody who is harder to trust, then keep them out of the public eye for a little bit, have them working on projects behind the scenes until that trust can be built and you're ready to introduce them into the community.
Amazing. Now, this is what you do. You teach people how to be community managers and how to be the right community manager for you. So do you want to take a moment to tell us about how people can get some support from you or tap into that?
Yeah, of course. So we have a guide. It's a free guide, best practices for community managers. So shanalyn.com/best practices. You can find that in the show notes, I'm sure. And that'll just kind of recap a lot of the things that we've talked about. What do you look for in a community manager? What should you expect them to do? What's their role in the business? And then we do have a community training program that's great for, like I said, the business owner to establish those foundations. Or if you already have a community manager on your team and you want to up-level their skills, or if you are a VA or a community manager and you want to get advanced in the role of community management, that's our Cultivate training course. And you can learn about that on our website. That's our core training that teaches all of the things we just talked about and takes community management from the person to actually having a strategy and a process that you can pass on to any great person that you hire.
Amazing. Well, I'll definitely put all those links in the show notes, but thank you so much for coming on today and having a conversation. So much good stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you have an established membership, you know that retention is the name of the game. When you can keep your customers longer, you increase the lifetime value of each and every customer, which increases your profitability in your business. If you've been wanting to decrease your churn, keep your customers longer, and establish somebody in your business to help really support you on the retention journey, I want you to take a look at my Retain Group Consulting Program. This is crafted specifically to help you establish a solid retention strategy and support a leader on your team that can become the retention leader you've been looking for. Just go to joinretain.com to learn more.
Hey friend, thanks for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe. Then do me a favor and leave a review letting me know what you want to hear more of. To learn more about the show or connect with me, head to shanalyn.com. That's shanalyn.com. Until next time.